Welcome to Frontiers, Defending Our Freedom and Faith, brought to you by the Greater Syracuse Association of Evangelicals. My name is Dr. Bruce Jones, President. Weeks ago, we introduced the Manhattan Declaration, which said, "We will fully and ungrudgingly give unto Caesar what is Caesar's, but under no circumstance will we render to Caesar what is God's." And more to the point, when it comes to the issue of pro-life, they affirm that we will be united and untiring in our efforts to roll back the license to kill that began with the abandonment of the unborn to abortion. It's quite impressive to me that even after 37 years of efforts on behalf of life, that today there are still hundreds of organizations fighting for the rights of a baby. Today I want to continue that fight and begin addressing the issue with a four-part series on the subject, and want to begin today with some evidence for the pro-life position. Of course, the Bible is our final authority, and most of us are familiar with the text in Jeremiah 1:5, where the Lord says, "Behold, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you." Or more so, the text in Psalm 139, where David says, "For thou didst form my inward parts, thou didst weave in me my mother's womb. My frame was not hidden from thee when I was made in secret. Thine eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in thy book they were all written, the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." But you might also turn to Psalm 51, because you may have missed this in David's confession, when he said, "Surely I have been a sinner from birth, but sinful from the time my mother conceived me." In other words, David believed that life began at conception, not at birth. And then there's just one more line of reasoning I'd like to leave with you today that leads to a pro-life position, and that's the use of two words. The first word is brophos, which is used to describe a child. And in the Gospel of Luke, it's describing Jesus in the manger after he was born as a child, as well as John the Baptist in the womb before he was born. In addition, there's another word used in Hebrew, taking up four pages in Young's Concordance, that equally describes a preborn child, a newborn baby, a child, and an adult, all because they are all equally human beings. But there are many facts that could also be assembled from the medical and scientific field to prove life begins at conception. For example, in the newly developed field of sonography, we now have a window into the womb to watch the development of a baby, and many mothers stop the abortion idea when they realize that in their womb is, in fact, a baby. It began at the conception, when already the genes, like the letters of a divine alphabet, spell out the unique characteristics of a new person, and the DNA is set for life. I like what one author said. "This act of conception has produced not a potential human being, but rather a human being with vast potential. After 3 weeks of conception, the heart begins to beat, the brain begins to function, and 1 week after, the full bodily functions have been formed." Now, these medical facts have not changed. In fact, they're more substantiated now than they were 40 years ago. In 1948, the World Medical Association declared, "We will maintain the utmost respect for human life from the time of conception." In 1969, the International Code of Medical Ethics said, "A doctor must always bear in mind the importance of preserving life from the time of conception." But since 1973, the facts are buried underneath the politics and semantics of pro-choice. What changed? Well, the whole area of morals changed in our world. But whereas the moral word baby had been used, now that was exchanged to an acceptable medical term, fetus, but it's done to imply that a fetus is not a person. Now, when a woman gets pregnant, whoever hears the mother say, "Hey, I'm carrying a fetus, congratulate me." No way, they say they have a baby, and they're looking forward to it. If the term pro-choice is used, we should ask the question, who gets to choose? Most time, the parents of an underage teenager have no say in the matter, and the law often eliminates the father from having any choice in the matter. And what about the baby that could be born but is aborted? What choice do they have in the matter? When pro-choice activists cry out, "My body, my choice," we should cry out on behalf of the babies and choose to defend their right to life. In the weeks to come, we will trace some of the cultural and political conflicts that have arisen over the issue of pro-life versus pro-choice and take notes of some stories where progress is being made. Let's stand up for life from conception till death. Join us next week at the frontier where our freedoms and faith are being attacked.
Thank you for listening. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of GSAE or the Mars Hill Network.